I'm happy to take any questions or comments from the board, so thank you for your time.
Thank you. Supervisor Hall?
Yeah. I kind of lost track of what CDMW is going to do with the warm water species behind the dam and preventing them from spreading downriver.
So currently there's not an eradication program that's being called for. Those fish are going to be subjected to the effects of drawdown and the water quality conditions within the reservoir as that occurs, and expect that the water quality is going to be incredibly poor during certain periods of time, and I suspect that the majority of those fish are going to perish.
Yeah. Anything that does live downstream, can it survive in the instant?
I mean, the short answer is yes. The long answer is likely not well. You know, there's going to be, I suspect that there's going to be some warm water fish that persist for a period of time. We're super fortunate that we don't have, like, a smallmouth bass up there, you know. These, the largemouth bass and the crappie and those other warm water fish are probably not going to do real well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you have an answer to this, Morgan, may not, but I've always had a concern with the sediment and its blockage of cold water refugia, and some of the smaller trips that come into the main stem clam are critical to the photo standpoint and other anatomy. With Savage Rapids Dam removal and with the removal of Condit Dam in Washington State, there's a considerable amount of money that was put into going in and re-deepening the resting pools as well as the access points on the trips. And I'm just wondering what the department's plans are post-dam removal, should it not go as we've been told, as a lot of things haven't gone as we've been told. And we have those blockages. So what's the fallback recovery plan, and who's going to fund it?
Yeah, so there's an existing sediment, there's an existing tributary connectivity management plan, right, that is will be implemented by KRC, and essentially it has called out essentially all of the tributaries upstream of I-5 as being locations for monitoring connectivity and maintaining connectivity. In terms of if there's sediment buildup and blockages at the mouth, there's a process and a program for addressing that and removing it. And it has multiple triggers, right? In terms of their ability to, it's not just a one and done, right? It requires an annual assessment annually for a couple years, as well as I believe waiting for a 5 or 10 year event. To a flow event to be able to trigger a revisiting for all of those sites. So, I mean, that helps address the tributary connectivity to some extent. I do not know of any plans for pool maintenance, as you kind of described in the main stem. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've read that plan. I think it's, my opinion is pretty short-sighted and doesn't go long enough.
Right.
And I'm supposed to believe that the sediment 5 miles down from the river is all of a sudden going to disappear. That coupled with the experience that I fish quite a bit on the Rogue. And those sediments on the Rogue are dredged about every 2 years.
Right.
At the mouth.
Right.
So I'm horribly or terribly concerned about the future of the plan with 5, 10 years down the road, and KRC not being there, and left holding the bag, if you will. The county's certainly not going to be able to do anything with it, but long term, I'd sure like to see a plan from the state.
Okay, duly noted. Thanks for that comment.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? How do the proposed regulations differ from what's current?
Well, each specific area is slightly different, and so I'll try to go quickly and just say that the sections downstream of Lakeview Road Bridge, essentially for Iron Gate Down, they're similar, right? They're very similar, but because there's already an anadromous fish there, right? So that's where the regulations are most similar. Upstream of Copco Road Bridge, they will be likely very different, because currently that is only a trout regulation. Those are just trout waters, and we have no anadromous fish up there now, and we deal with anadromous fish considerably different than we do with trout in terms of the regulation. So you can expect some major changes there, as well as underneath the reservoir footprint. And the tributaries, if consistency is gained, then you would expect there to be less opportunity in the anadromous portions of the tributaries.
Mm-hmm. And so you indicate that there's 400 miles of new habitat that will be accessed with dam removal. How does California Department of Fish and Wildlife coordinate with the Oregon side once they hit Oregon? If you're protecting on this side, what's going to happen in Oregon?
Yeah, that's a good question. And we coordinate with the Oregon folks regularly. We meet with them at least once a month and have general coordination calls. We do see that the being that we only share one crossing with the state of Oregon, that it would be acceptable to have changes and differences in the regulations at that location. Both the state of Oregon and the state of California are proposing a wait and see, roughly three generations of the salmon's life history before we propose the harvest of our shared salmon. Right. So essentially, there's going to be there's less sharing initially, but we'll be having to have considerable conversations about sharing during harvest management for fall chinook particularly.
So is there a monitoring program that will be in place for, that new habitat on both sides of the state line?
I can't speak to the Oregon monitoring plan as closely as the California side. I do know that Oregon is working very hard. Mark Herford and the folks up there, Philip Milbourne in Oregon, to fund their monitoring program. I know that the state of California has put in for a budget change proposal that has been approved that will be providing 5 additional permanent positions for the department to carry out those monitoring actions here for the state. So we're well positioned to be able to have folks on the ground to implement the monitoring work that we're proposing.
And is there any ESA listed species that you'll have to deal with?
When the dams come out, our monitoring within the state will be, we're hopeful, intercepting and interacting with the listed coho salmon and state listed spring chinook potentially someday too.
What about the sucker?
We're not anticipating the suckers surviving in that main stem habitat.
But they're listed, is that correct?
They are, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. For sure, Ms. Roger.
How long is the actual restoration project slated for the rehab part of it?
I don't have a great answer for that. I think that the there's going to be folks that could probably better address that question than I. I will say that there's an initial flurry of restoration that will be ongoing for the first 5 years. If you look at the some of the funding sources and streams of restoration, some of the other restoration opportunities throughout the state, our restoration is ongoing. Whether we're looking at coastal streams or Central Valley streams, there's no shortage of opportunities for improvement, right? So I see restoration occurring for many, many years.
And then there'll be monitoring after that.
Well, the monitoring will be initiated immediately, because we need to be able to provide meaningful information to adjust these regulations. And we also have an active harvest management program that relies on annual data for fall run Chinook within the basin, and so the need for that monitoring information will be immediate. We cannot wait.
Yeah. And then I know now we get the monitoring information. I get the monitoring information every week, 2 weeks, whatever that is. Are you going to change your monitoring stations to move further up?
So I would say not change them, but add to them. Right? I mean, like the information that we're collecting on the Scott and the Shasta and the Salmon and Bogus, none of that goes away, right?
Right.
We still need that critical information. We just have to expand our influence into new areas. Yeah.
And then can you tell us if you have any idea how long it will take for that sediment to move out of those upper reaches, and then what do you expect the regeneration time frame to be for the Salmonella population?
I'll say that I'm not the appropriate person to tell you about the longevity of the sediment within the basin. I think that there's other experts in the within the department and within the overall project that are better suited for that. I'm sure that if you were interested in a sediment specific presentation, that we could gather the right folks into the room to provide you that information, and I'm sure that people would welcome that opportunity. But to follow up on the second part of your question, we're looking at a 15-year time period for, at least as it relates to Fall Run Chinook, roughly three generations. Right, we're kind of taking a roughly three generation pause. And I'm talking about harvest opportunities upstream of Iron Gate Dam, of the existing Iron Gate Dam location only, right? The harvest management structure that currently exists for the take of Fall Run Chinook downstream of the project area will continue.
Leave it there. Thanks.
Yep. Supervisor Chris? Three lifespans, is that 12 years?
Well, depending on the species, I mean, with coho salmon, that's roughly 12 years, and with the Chinook salmon, it's roughly 15.
Right.
Yeah.
It's fun going last. What's
that?
I said it's fun going last. Clean it better. In regards to coordination recovery with Oregon, for the targets to be, is it going to be the Oregon targets that stipulate what we're doing within California?
Are you asking specifically about Fall Run Chinook?
Yes.
It's anticipated that there's going to be a need for a new stock recruit analysis to be developed for the basin as a whole, and which is why we're saying no harvest in the new habitat for a period of time. That'll hopefully allow for some some large, medium, and small escapements to occur within the new habitat footprint, and we'll be able to rebuild that stock recruit analysis similar to what we have for the existing habitat, and that'll give us some insight as to what the new harvestable surplus will be. And then in terms of the sharing of those fish, we see that playing out at the Pacific Fishery Management Council,
right.
And there's going to be a large, long, slow, deliberate conversation as it relates to the sharing of that resource.
Just to throw a few different things out there, the target. Do we have a target number for Oregon in the coordination meeting so far?
No,
we don't have that.
And then throughout for not that I'm aware of.
Okay. That's an important part. Those claims that the salmon were in such large numbers in the Klamath Lake, in the Klamath tributaries, upper basin for a long period of time, that can be challenged what the number would have been because suckerfish were the main diet for the indigenous folks in there. You had a choice between suckerfish or salmon, we would have been eating salmon. So I kind of get worried about what the number is going to be. If there's a moving target in regards to this, if it's a moving target, it's a concern for me, because we've always concluded it's kind of like blue seal football. It's not fair to anybody, really, where that target's going to be at. So you talked with Supervisor Orban about having the people in the room, be very interested with the people in the room to know what the targets and what we have to aim to go after. I recognize that might not be your position here, but to know what that target is.
Yeah, and you know, sort of as it relates to Fall Run Chinook, where we've had decades worth of harvest management, you know, we're not we concern ourselves less with the ceiling, right? We're more concerned about the floor, right? In terms of maintaining minimum spawner objectives, and I think that the it seems reasonable to me, anyways, that at some point there'll be a harvestable surplus. It might not be a target, but the more important conversation will be, how do we share those fish that we think are available?
Yes. And the reason for the target is the impact, of course, on agriculture as well as timber harvest in those areas, because they'll be regulated in those regards. And so, you know, what target we have to go after. It's kind of like with the I haven't used this analogy before in the past, but the Butte Valley Wildlife Refuge in the Butte Valley East Lake area. You know, historically, a large number of geese landed there in the fall. Huge number. That same number doesn't land there now. It used to land there 50 years ago. Yet I don't hold the fish and game responsible for those geese not landing there. Because the only thing it can control is the refuge. Can't control everything else from the back of the refuge. So I can't hold it responsible for that. You know, that same respect you've given to the agriculture and the timber products up there is that only be responsible for what comes back into the area. We can kick a bunch of stuff out, but we can only be held responsible for what we're kicking out, not for what's returning. So for the right managers, when it gets to those points. And then for bogus creek, why would we need to have consistency? Is there reasons for that, or is it each tributary unique in its own ways?
I would say yes. The answer is that yes, of course, each tributary is unique in its own ways, right? For a tributary, its size within the basin, within the entire Klamath Trinity system, it's the only one of its size that we allow fishing. And that, to me, is inconsistent with the rest of the basin.
And has there been any tributary work, like on Shovel Creek or Judith Creek, in preparation for an energy risk for troops? Any prep work or anything?
There's been some master's thesis dissertations that have been conducted in terms of trying to qualify the habitat and assess the habitat. You know, the department's been working on, we updated our wild trout assessment in Double Creek, which is something that we do roughly every 10 to 15 years. We made sure that we got that done this last summer to have additional baseline information there. And we have done a fair amount of genetic tissue sampling collections in Jenny and Fall and Shovel Creek to be able to help set the baseline. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yep. You bet.
You mentioned, I heard the number 5. There's 5 more jobs created for follow-up and those kind of things?
Long-term
step, monitoring. Did I get that right?
You did.
And would those be local jobs? Local
yeah.
People assigned to?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Any follow-up questions from the board? Supervisor Cobson?
So I think that maybe our last meeting here with regard to the NITS fisheries related, we had asked for like an MOU with regard to no harm to the Scott and Shasta systems with dam removal if, per se, the sediment release conflicts with the spawn, so that if there are potentially no returning salmon 3 years hence, these systems aren't at fault for that. Where are we in that? Do you know?
I have no idea. Yeah, I haven't been part of that conversation,
okay.
But I can certainly reach out to folks that may know more about that.
Okay. Thank you. I'm watching behind you. Sorry, they're trying to figure out who's going to come up.
That's it for me.
All right. Hey, thank you. Very appreciate the information. This will be not a one-off, so prepare to come back.
Absolutely. No, right. Thanks for your time.
Wendy?
Yeah, one more.
I don't know. It looks like somebody might answer my question. I don't know.
Come on up and answer a question.
Thank you for the reminder, Supervisor. We have been working on this very issue and discussing the best path forward. It is particularly complicated, and I'll let Mike speak to this a little bit more in regards to the number of different agencies that are involved and what that would look like. So it would not necessarily come in the form of an MOU, but we're working on getting some other form of assurances.
Yeah, we talked to our Selfish and Wildlife.
Harris?
Yeah, so we talked to our Office of General Counsel about it and talked about some of the, it sounded like you wanted an MOU not only with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, but with NOAA. And I think where we left off after all our discussions was the county was going to prepare some type of request to the state of exactly what you're looking for in terms of coverage that we could respond to. Okay. So that's where we left off.
So we're working through that, and it will not necessarily come in the form of an MOU, but some other assurance.
Yeah, I'm just looking for something that no harm.
Yes.
Yeah. And so once we get that from the county, then our Office of General Counsel can respond and figure out.
So when the county, you say the county, is that you?
I'm working on it.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Okay.
That's on my plate. I'm responsible.
So is that?
So I guess it's pretty simple what we're looking for. Mike's looking for anyway is that, you know, we're barreling along with some pretty severe curtailments in both those basins currently on agriculture to maintain fish populations. All of a sudden, if we see a collapse the year the sediments are flushed down the river and there has been no change upstream, we don't want to be held accountable for that. And we don't want to see regulations ratchet down even more the next year.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's take five, Wendy.
Thank you.